Hello, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardawar.
I'm Reviews Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
And Happy New Year. We've survived. We've made it to 2020.
Well, we barely survived.
Hooray!
We're back!
It's an election year, folks. It's going to be terrible.
You had to get political. You just had to.
It's going to be awful. Today, I think we're going to talk about everything we're doing to prepare for CES, the Consumer Electronics Show. It is our nightmare every year, but it's also a thing where we see some of the coolest tech that kind of gets us what we can expect for the rest of the year, basically. As always, if you're enjoying the show, please drop us a review on iTunes. Subscribe to the Engadget podcast on iTunes or your podcast catcher of choice. Every little bit of that helps. Like, reviews help, subscribers help. It kind of tells us people are actually listening. So we're not just talking into the void, which I'm sure Sherlyn will just enjoy on her own.
I really do. I love talking to myself.
CES is where the entire tech ecosystem comes together.
So CES, let's talk about this thing, because it feels like it's a big topic every year. We kind of get some of our biggest news from it, and I'm sure our listeners and readers have heard a lot about it over the years. Sherlyn, do you have any thoughts? What is CES to you? What does it mean in your heart?
CES to me is like Hell Week, but also like a love fest. And I don't know how that sounds to y'all, but
a love fest for your friends or for tech?
For my friends and for tech. It's where I get exposed to most of the tech that I don't get to see on a daily basis.
I will say, not to sound too hyperbolic, but I think it is the closest thing tech journalists and writers in general. It's the closest thing to going to war that we
yes.
have.
Yes, because you bond in the fire.
It
is CES.
And not to like take away from people who actually face danger and, you know,
yes, the
actual important things. But it is an onslaught of news and relentless PR and just like new things. So when you come out of this with a newfound sense of appreciation for your coworkers and all your friends who help you get through it. So CES started out as... It was always an industry event. It was an industry event to show off the latest and greatest in consumer electronics. So it's been around for decades. And I feel like its purpose, though, has changed over the years. In the 90s and the 80s, it was a thing where every major tech announcement would be dropping at CES first. Today, things are a little different. I feel like tech companies have learned, thanks to Apple, mainly thanks to Apple and their blowout product launch events, tech companies have learned that they can do this on their own. They can control the news cycle on their own, have, you know, a whole week or weekend of news all to themselves with these announcements. So why share, you know, the stage with so many other companies and so much other news at CES when you could just do something at another point in the year and kind of have the spotlight to yourself? So now CES is in a weird point, I think. Like, it is, there are still major announcements made here. I don't think it's the same level of announcements. A lot of companies are choosing, like even today as we're recording this, it is January 2nd. A lot of news that typically would drop at CES has actually dropped before CES, which is interesting too. We're seeing companies like Dell and HP not announce as many products there as they used to. How do you feel CES has changed, Sherlyn? And how long have you been going?
Man, I was waiting for you to ask that question.
Because you're...
I'm a baby.
You're a baby.
CES baby. Well,
sure.
I'm a CES teenager. This will be my, I don't know, seventh CES?
Oh, that's not bad. That's pretty good.
Sixth CES. My first CES was 2014 or 2013. I can't remember. One of those years. And my first CES, the company I was working for put me up at the Venetian, which is really nice.
That's
However,
very nice. Yeah.
I was writing until 4 a.m. every night because we were each in charge of just too many things.
That's CES, baby.
Baby. There you go. Engadget does things a little differently. Much more comprehensively. I write less late into the night. It's not changed all that much because I started going to CES at a time when the big major announcements were kind of already just falling to the wayside at CES.
By 2014, I feel like Samsung had already taken hold. Like, they were the biggest ones over the past decade. Like, their launch events have become the big thing, the only big star at CES, and probably because they can afford it. And Samsung is a company that does a good job of just like promoting itself a lot.
I'm glad I was working CES the year Michael Bay melted down at that Samsung.
That was good. That was good.
It was
Let's
amazing.
Drop a clip of that in there.
As a director, I try to the type is all off, sorry, but I'll just wing this.
Tell us what you think.
Yeah. We'll wing it right now. I try to take people on an emotional ride, and
the curve? How does it, how do you think it's going to impact how viewers experience your movies?
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, let's thank Michael Bay for joining us.
That was an amazing moment because Michael Bay is a guy known for making, bombastic action movies. And the thing that scares him is getting up on stage and losing the teleprompter at CES because clearly he didn't go to rehearsal or anything.
He had a real explosion.
It was amazing. It was an amazing moment. I feel a little bad for him, too, because that's my nightmare of being on stage and just like not knowing what to say. But that is occasionally you will get a crazy thing like that at CES. So I've been going since 2010. Not that much longer than you, Sherlyn, but it was a very different show. Like when I went, Android, I think, was just on the cusp of launching in America. Like there weren't as many Android devices.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For
like,
sure.
Oh, no. What it was Samsung's Galaxy line.
Yes,
I was here at a
huge
launch event in New York. But yeah, they were kind of a big deal there. Like the beginning of Galaxy, there was a lot going on. My first year at CES was, I did not stay at the Venetian. I stayed at a Roach Motel on the Strip because my editor did not do a great job of setting me up, and it was not a great
success,
experience.
No.
So it was a lot of work, bad experience of where I was staying, hard to get around because I didn't have a cab budget or anything. So that was my worst CES, and it's kind of poisoned me on the whole thing. But I think on the bright side, it will never be as bad as that. I hope, fingers crossed, knocking on wood and everything else. So what's interesting this year, Sherlyn? We got a couple different things. Apple's actually going to be there, right?
For the first time in a really long time.
Since the mid-90s, I think.
For real, too, because last year Apple just did this ad very, I don't know if tongue-in-cheek is the right way to describe it. It was very like poking fun at all the companies that were...
They were trolling
there.
Everybody else.
They were trolling. They were like, oh, well, those things will never take care of your security.
They painted the side of a hotel or some building with an ad saying,
right,
like, we will never
center.
Share your data. Like, we care about your privacy.
Yeah.
And everybody could see it because it was like right in front of the whole convention center. It was just like, hey, Apple's here, and just saying, you guys are all messing up. This year, they're actually going to be there, which is different. So yeah, Apple was basically throwing shade last year remotely. They just put up this ad. This year, they're actually going to be there participating in a panel about privacy, right, Sherlyn?
It is, yeah. But to be clear, they're not actually announcing anything here. They're
no
not
news,
launching
yeah.
products. Yeah, and they won't. What I think, you know, you were sort of alluding to earlier about this being an industry event, is it's really fun to see, like, Apple, Amazon, Samsung duke it out here. But also, when I've seen some like on ground kind of interaction between big companies like Amazon and a little startup in the corner of Sands, that's where they get their ideas from. That's where they
work
with
steal
people.
Their ideas from.
Well, yeah. Or other people steal each other's ideas, and I think that's like the fun thing about CES is how these you know things burgeon. And so the newest technology is coming, and that's why CES 2020 and all CESs are interesting. But it's a big, as always, it's always a big TV show, right? Like, I feel like that's always the biggest, most eye-grabbing thing.
It is. It's a big TV show. So here's the broad aspects of what CES is now. It is a huge TV show, but I think because it is a place for all the companies to really show off their latest tech. And by the way, what I mean by CES being a TV show, it is where we're seeing a lot of the new TV tech for the first time. So last year, we saw LG's rollable TV, their rollable OLED that we've been hearing about for a while. This morning, the news broke that they're going to have a rollable that rolls from the ceiling, not just from the floor, which is probably even more useful. So weird stuff like that. I feel like 8K is going to be a bigger topic, certainly because we've been hearing about that since last year. Maybe some high frame rate stuff, more TVs. Pretty much every modern TV right now is supporting 120 FPS, which means less for like video content. Although there are things like I've already pre-ordered the Gemini Man Blu-ray, which has the 60 FPS cut, you know, version of the movie. There are things like that, but it's more for like gaming. So a lot of new TVs are supporting G-Sync from NVIDIA and AMD's FreeSync technology. And these are things that can basically match the refresh rate of the game. with the TV and helps avoid flicker and all sorts of other visual issues. So it makes games look a lot better. Those are all things we're looking forward to seeing on new TVs. And what else? Some new ultra portables probably too, right?
Chalene, always.
Like, in addition to the XPS 13.
In the past 2 years, I want to say, I think there's just been a lot more PCs released at CES than the years prior to those. I think we're going to just keep seeing them get like thinner. Oh, don't forget 5G everything.
5G everything.
So 5G laptops, most likely, I think. We're going to see, I mean, today the Dell Latitude that I wrote up and got published today is already a 5G laptop. Mm-hmm. We're going to see, I think, a lot of people talk about incorporating 5G into their devices, whether it's just ultra portables or, like, I don't know, smart speakers. I'm just spitballing.
Yeah, I think less than like 5G devices. I want, like, remember when everybody had like hotspots, like before like LTE was like a big deal. I feel like 5G hotspots.
There are those.
Yeah, there are some, but
HTC,
I feel like
and SprintMate one.
There is a lot of room to really innovate with what those are, because like make it a big honking battery. Like make it, those are things hotspots have been doing, but make it something that also has like Wi-Fi 6 and like really powerful Wi-Fi to connect to all of your existing devices.
I am quite sure we're going to see that, or if we haven't already.
Because otherwise I'm going to be using these 5G laptops just as like a, to spit out as hotspots on their own.
I think
spit out 5G's
we just
everything
need to
else.
Have like options for people. Like for me, I don't want to carry too many things around. I don't want to have a hotspot. But you rather have the power dedicated to your work.
Maybe I already have a laptop I like and I'm not ready to update that yet.
Yeah.
So that's where the hotspots always came in. And honestly, I think that would make a lot more sense for people. Like hotspots were always great as like something you could use for just for work, right? You have your normal phone, you have your devices you already like, but maybe you just need a little oomph of power. I feel like 5G hotspots have a really interesting role to play moving forward.
Yeah, for the next 2 years, definitely at least. Other stuff I'm looking forward to at CES, I mean, yeah, lots of laptops, but I think more importantly, the power they pack, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what's, all the chip stuff. You're the chip guy.
I mean, I mentioned AMD and Intel are going to be here. We don't know what they're doing exactly, but I'd assume we're going to see some more new 10th gen chips from Intel, probably some of the more powerful ones. And AMD, we are all waiting for some more Radeon news and hearing about the details of like their Radeon graphics cards with ray tracing. Because
Qualcomm also has a keynote planned, so hey, Qualcomm will be there.
You and Qualcomm. I mean,
listen,
we dedicated a whole episode to Qualcomm. I'm done talking about those stupid mobile chips. But
these are not
going to
be mobile chips. They're going to be other things. But yeah, I mean, we were talking about chips. Come on, and talking
about
5G. Listen.
I love hearing about Qualcomm stuff. I also throw a ton of salt in everything Qualcomm says. So sure,
there's going to be
a ton of announcements. Basically, this is going to be another show where the shape of our future devices are really going to, we're going to start to see like what computers, every device next year, probably some surprises too. Like I'm really looking forward to the surprises we'll see at CES.
One year, something that really surprised me was this like wearable breast pump that was made by a company called Willow.
Yeah, that was cool.
I did one video on it and it went freaking viral.
And now there are a couple of companies doing that too. So that's a genuinely useful product.
Exactly. Because it really helps moms. And obviously, I mean, the copycats or the people who pushed out their products afterwards clearly saw the like interest people had in it from CES. So you're right. Like it certainly shapes the way or the things that we see coming out the rest of the year.
That's also a really usable wearable too. Like just from what my wife had to deal with, like after you have a baby, like the whole idea of pumping and sitting down in one place and like doing everything, it is painful. It takes forever having it on the go. That's the sort of thing where I'm like, from a male perspective, I never really thought of that. But from the people who developed this, like that is genuinely useful. That is good wearable tech.
And you know what was really my favorite part about everything was the people who made the device, the CEO of the company, they're just so nice.
Yeah.
It was so nice to meet the people behind these products at the show, too. That's another thing I look
forward to. That's cool. I actually do remember a lot of my interactions from, company people. I do like it when, like, people who are actually in charge of the products are there more than just marketing folks. For small companies, there's a big startup section at CES2, and a ton of companies come there, companies from all over the world, too. So it's overwhelming. It's insane. But I don't normally like exploring startups, during the year, just because I feel a little burnt out of that. I used to cover them so much and they're just a lot less interesting than they used to be. But I still occasionally run into cool things at CES. It's also kind of a big car show now because there's more car tech happening. So there's been like Android Auto, CarPlay has been big topics at CES for a while. And it's also a show where a lot of car makers just keep talking about, like, their AI advancements. So NVIDIA has talked quite a bit about, like, their self-driving car tech and how it's kind of making its way into vehicles. That's not quite there yet, but we've seen the progress over the last few years. It's a good show for seeing the nitty-gritty, the stuff that works underneath everything else and powers everything else. And it's a good show to see, like, partnerships taking place, mm-hmm. too. Like, CES is where we started to hear more about, like, a couple of years ago when Intel and AMD partnered for that weird hybrid chip that had Radeon graphics. That chip is not happening anymore because Intel is doing its own graphics thing.
So sad.
It was exactly what we predicted. It was basically a stopgap measure to fix whatever, you know, whatever deficiencies Intel had at the time. So, and then we see a lot of weird stuff too, right?
A ton of super weird stuff. Like last year, the thing that won like one of our best of CES awards was an Impossible Burger.
Before people complain, Impossible Burger is tech. It is lab grown, created meat. Like there's a lot of like research and technology that goes into making that. So we got a lot. I heard as we were announcing the Impossible Burger, I heard in the audience, like a lot of other companies snickering is like, oh, what's tech about Impossible Burger? Everything. Everything is tech.
That's also like, yeah, I mean, the CTA allowed them to show somewhere up there. Yeah. Someone thought it was tech. And I mean, I agree with you. The other thing that was really, I remember as something really weird was Netflix did this like altered carbon promo. 1 year before the show launched, it had people just in giant like Ziplocs, like carcasses.
What?
And if you've seen that,
I didn't see that.
You didn't go, but if you've seen the show, you know what I'm talking about. These are just like sleeves and in their like, I guess, freezing packaging. And then there's the very esoteric stuff, the like Wi-Fi through your light, like your light bulbs.
Wi-Fi through your light bulb.
Li-Fi.
Li-Fi.
And that's its actual name, by the way. Li-Fi. It stands for light fidelity. I know. And it's a visible light communication system, VLC, which is not the VLC I usually think of. So basically it allows wireless communications at super high speeds through light, which I guess like the speed of light. Well, look, I don't fully grasp the science behind it.
It was just like a weird thing we saw. I mean, a couple of years ago, I saw there were several companies working on wireless power, which sounds like a terrible idea. It sounds like, oh, I really just want to microwave myself. That's what's happening right now. But no, this is something we've been hearing about for a while, since the days of Nikola Tesla. Like, he's been experimenting with that stuff.
I remember being shown like to like this dodgy little corner in the back hall of like the Sands West.
Don't go to the dodgy corners.
But that's where they showed me that wireless power you're talking about. They put the puck in a box and they're like, this puck can charge your phone. That's like a foot away.
The thing I saw,
exciting.
I forget which company it was, but it was like a big router thing. It looked like the HomePod. So it was like a big circular thing. It was just like, oh, we could just stick this in a corner and it will just like
charge everything
nearby. That is a technology, by the way, where I cannot wait for that. I feel like it does sound a little crazy, but rewind 20 years, guys. Like, wireless internet sounded crazy before Wi-Fi finally became a thing. Like, so many IT people just did not trust Wi-Fi for a while. So, like, I remember the days. Like, I was one of the first people to get a wireless router at my college just to have the convenience to step outside of my room to go online. Wireless power is this thing
might be the latest and greatest thing.
I think it's more interesting than freaking the wireless power that exists right now, the sort of like thing where you place your phone on like a touchpad because you can't use your devices.
Charging.
It's contact charging. But imagine like you walk into a mall and you walk into like a store or something and your device, maybe it's not getting charged a lot, but your device doesn't lose charge, which I think would be a really, you know, helpful thing for a lot of people, because typically you go into a place like a mall and you lose signal. That is when your device starts draining battery because it's searching for a signal. So it's that sort of thing that I think could be really interesting moving forward. Yeah.
There's a lot of very interesting stuff that just hasn't taken off yet. And typically you'll find them at like these really crammed, crowded little like halls at CES, which is, by the way, spread out across all of Las Vegas. There is the LVCC, the convention center, which is where all the main stuff goes. And this is where you'll see like LG's Cave, which is basically all its like super eye-popping TVs, which are like curved TVs. One year they made like Valley, which is beautiful.
Every year, they take all their giant OLED screens and just create this thing that you're walking through. So it's like a wall painted. It is a ceiling painted of OLED, and it is it's beautiful because, like, they also kill the lighting in that room. So it gets really, really dark. So then it really shows off the power of OLED of, like, oh, these screens are getting inky black, like pure blackness. Yeah. And then a little bit of light comes on and they can really just show off that contrast.
It's such an experience to just go and see what, like, this is creating art. Meanwhile, across the, like, aisle, I guess, from them, it's big aisle, so you don't really see it from over there. But right outside the booth is Samsung's, like, little roller coaster thing. Like, it's not a roller coaster, but it's more like a VR ride.
Stupid VR ride. It was a thing where they have a bunch of people on, like, it's a hydraulics thing where people are sitting in a stadium, like hydraulic stadium seating, and it moved with the people as they were in VR.
It really looked like a theme park ride. Yeah, like, it's, you're not dropping from a height, but you are being shaken here
and
there.
We're probably not going to see that this year because the Gear VR is practically dead.
So there's always a lot of, like, weird wearable stuff. I think the term wearable is so broad that everyone kind of just like, yeah, let's tag that name onto it and market my stuff
as
such.
Well, I mean, it's anything with a chip or connectivity that you put on your body. And that's anything. Like, you could make a strong argument that your smartphone is a form of wearable because when you're working out, you will strap that thing to yourself and have a lot of connectivity.
Man, there's a lot of stuff going on. You're really skirting the boundaries there. But I will say here,
everything is a wearable.
Last year, one of the weird things was, well, not weird, but one of the wearables was a UV sensing chip that you could, like, wear on your fingernail that L'Oreal did. And the other stuff, like, there was a pill that you could swallow and it would monitor your body temperature. It
seems like there are easier ways to do that, but
There's a lot, so there's a lot of really strange medical stuff, healthcare stuff that also goes on at CES. I appreciate the heck out of that. Like, I love that people are trying to find ways to improve your life, but this is the sort of thing I want to see, like, 50 years of research gone into it before I even feel safe, like, putting anything like that in my body, because you never know.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And some of these have, like, good research too.
We saw our first foldable phone at CES last year, and also we broke one of the prototypes, or our video person did. I would say V.
One person in particular.
I thought it was the video guy, but okay.
I don't know who did it.
The company was not too happy, but also, like, hey man, you're building a foldable phone. People are going
to
break
Bound
these things.
To happen.
Like, this is what you're doing.
It happened to Samsung on a large scale, on an embarrassingly large scale.
I think that was also kind of a clear sign, right? It felt like that was a sign that foldables were not even ready because that prototype broke so easily. There are a lot of things we learned from CES, and it's sort of like that. Like, oh, that's not a good sign for this entire industry. There was also a sex tech controversy last year.
Last year was a very interesting year to cover CES for me. I covered the sex tech fallout, which I'm going to get into in a little bit. But last year also, there was the U.S.-China trade relations going on that was, like, it was very strained, and the CTA was actively trying to get its member companies to lobby the White House against these tariffs because they were convinced it was going to be the death of, like, I guess, I don't know, consumerism. They were telling me that, like, oh no, you look at holiday shopping, it's going to drop drastically because all these, like, price hikes are going to happen. I don't know that that really is a thing this year anymore.
Well, also because the tariffs didn't quite happen.
Right. They managed to figure it out, which is great. All that lobbying must have helped. But the other thing that happened was this sex tech story. So without getting too much into it, here's a little bit of what happened. CTA will welcome all kinds of gadgets. But last year, they gave an award to a company that marketed its device as a personal robotic. It was a vibrator.
I mean, that's a personal robotic. It's as personal as a robot can get. Sure.
Yes. And they were awarded, like, an innovation award. And one of the things that comes with getting this award is the CTA will promote you alongside all of its other winners. It'll give you this space on an exhibit, like, that it's showing to all the media. Mm-hmm. And then, like, at some point about, you know, in October 29th, 2018, the CTA wrote a letter to the CEO of the company called Laura DiCarlo, saying that, hey, unfortunately, the CTA is exercising its option to remove the OSO, which is the device that won the award, from the CES 2019 Innovation Awards program under a certain language as part of our contract. So, like, they gave an award to a vibrator, took it back, and was like, yeah, we're not happy
because it's a vibrator, basically.
it is something that, like, it says that it fails to comply with rules. It wasn't, like, it endangers the safety and well-being.
So everything the CTA, I feel like, was saying after the fact was wrong, because they've definitely promoted and awarded things that were worse, but also were totally fine for, like, men.
Exactly.
You know?
For example, so there's Naughty America, which consistently does their porn VR thing. And they have, like, blatant, like, banners in, yeah, sure, a little backward, like, little corner of Sands or somewhere less trafficked, but still big banners and signs. And, like, they, you know, they also denied exhibition space to someone that, another company that I covered, CS prior, which is called Lioness. And Lioness also makes a vibrator for women. It's, it's got sensors in it to detect, like, the strength of your, you know, like, vibration, but also, like, if you're climaxing, and it will detect the intensity of that and learn all about it and feed it back to you. It's like a biosensing thing. And it wasn't allowed to be displayed on the main, like, show floor areas, and they had to, like, get a separate hotel room to show people their product. So there's been a lot of, like, it's women's sex, like, toys or sexual personal well-being devices that the CTA seems to have a problem about.
It's a weirdly conservative, like, here's the thing. What's really funny is the CTA, like, I feel like a lot of pro-business organizations are all like, yeah, don't restrict us. Don't restrict what we're saying. Don't put tariffs on our products. But something that makes them a little uncomfortable, especially if it's something meant for women, they'll be like, oh, not like that. We don't.
There's also Oh
no
My
free
Bod.
Speech there.
There's also, like, I don't want to go again too far into it, but there's also Oh My Bod that's been allowed to display their products a while ago, but I interviewed them. They sounded like they had to jump through a lot of hoops also to just get that approval. So this year, though, this year, what's exciting is that the CTA, after all of that media fallout, was like, we're going to allow sex tech. We definitely did award this robotics thing an award again. Like, man, I am excited to go see this device, see how the CTA reacts to it. They haven't pulled back. They haven't rescinded any awards yet. I'll be interviewing the founder of both companies at the show. We're going to put that together for the podcast and give you all kind of the behind the scenes straight from these women's mouth about the experience.
And yes, that means we are still recording podcasts at CES. We're definitely going to do a wrap-up show. But as Sherilyn's saying, we're also working on getting some interviews done. Hopefully we can get those together and maybe either add those to the main show or, you know, drop a couple quick episodes before that.
So stay tuned. Like, check out your feed. Keep an eye. Hit subscribe.
Hit subscribe, yo.
I think the thing that all this shows also is that, like, it reeks of not just some sort of conservative, like, you know, like the CTA being a bit conservative, but also a lot of these female founders have said that they feel it's a little sexist.
For sure. And this is a show where there are still booth babes, like, still, like, they're trying to go low on it, but it's not like they're not actively.
The CTA has gone out, like, in a big way to say they're all about inclusivity, diversity, and trying to get a lot of women to be at the show. And a very prominent woman they've invited to be on a panel this year is the one and only Ivanka Trump.
Oh, the consumer electronics expert.
The expert.
The business mogul.
Of all the women out there, and this is one of the big problems.
Certified genius, yeah.
One of the big problems that female tech Twitter had a huge issue with is this is not the best person to pick to represent consumer tech, women in consumer tech.
Quite literally one of the worst people, but yeah. Because her businesses are more known for their, like, not so great labor in China and other countries. Like, that's what she's known for, not really electronics. But okay. I'm going with this. What is the pitch for bringing Ivanka Trump here, Sherilyn?
She's here to talk about jobs. She's okay. I'm trying to get the right wording out here. All right.
I don't want to be too glib, but it's also like,
yeah. I'm going to give the exact wording so that we're not. Okay. A lot of people have made statements about this. Gary Shapiro, the head of the CTA that runs CES, said, "We welcome her to the CES keynote stage as she shares her vision for technology's role in creating and enabling the workforce of the future." Don't cut me off just yet because I'm about to tell you what Ivanka Trump herself said. She says, "I am excited to join this year for a substantive discussion on the show on how the government is working with private sector leaders to ensure American students and workers are equipped to thrive in the modern digital economy." So I think it sounds like she's saying, let's buy them some Chromebooks.
I don't know. I feel like I don't even know if it's going to get that far. I hope somebody at this panel asks questions. So how is tech helping to imprison all those kids at the border. Like, there's a lot of that. How's tech being used to stop immigrants from getting into the country? Like, there are definitely tech angles, just probably not the ones we'll hear at CES.
The other people I'm not entirely sure who else is on the panel with her just yet, but I know of so many women in tech, female vice president at Samsung, who make these devices that they want to, like,
there are so many.
Enable.
There are so many people. Lisa Su of AMD, the CEO of AMD. Like, there's so many more people.
Elena
who could
Cohen
be having
at Samsung is as also great. I like her a lot. I mean, there's just so many more. And, you know, diversity isn't just, you know, about gender. It's also about ethnicities.
But this is not a diversity play. This is a play for the CTA to feel like they're, you know, happy, good with the Trump administration.
It's a headline.
Which is a weird thing to do, because who knows even how long, you know, they'll have to play nice with Trump and everyone. Anyway, we're going to get too deep into this. It just feels like not only did they, reject the sex toy before, now they're doing this completely other boneheaded thing where I feel like the stain of the decision is going to be a bigger problem for the CTA than the actual panel itself. So I'm sure the panel will be harmless and totally vacuous and not give us anything. But it really says a lot about what the CTA is as an organization.
It's going to be something fun to look out for. I think we're going to have eyes on it.
I don't think fun is the word, but okay.
For me, I'll be here with my popcorn. I don't know about you. But I'll also be excited to check out the other celebrities that will be at CES. Now, every year, a lot of mainstream celebrities come to CES for some reason.
We had this conversation. What counts as a celebrity for you?
Wow.
Caroline?
Just someone who people know for no reason other than, like, they're on TV. I guess they're on TV and movies and sing songs, make music. A lot of you'll find a lot of music makers, I think, at the show because, you know, audio tech always needs a rep. Monster always has some celebrity. Last year, I went to a concert where I think it was Rita Ora. This year, Janelle Monáe is slated to make an appearance at a party. We've got...
Listen, Janelle Monáe should just be the, like, ambassador of CES. Like, she should just be the queen of the show. And just, she's an android. Literally, just have an android host the show.
I think it was last CES or two CESs ago where I broke down and cried when I saw...
Aw.
I know, where I saw this thing, the Affleck duck. I don't know if you saw it.
That was last year.
Huggy
duck?
It's a huggy little duck that's meant to, like, cheer up cancer kids. I don't know if that's a kosher phrase to say, but kids with cancer, kids who are suffering.
Kids with cancer. Wow.
Kids who are suffering from illnesses that really just get them down. And, you know, they just don't want to, they don't want to go through chemo. They're going through all these invasive, painful surgeries. And as the guy was making his pitch to me about why Affleck made a duck that they're going to give to every kid that's suffering from a debilitating disease, I started tearing up. I was like, you're making me cry. And then I was there with Terrence O'Brien, our managing editor, and we were covering the product. And I looked at him and I was like, Terrence, I can't do this video. I really can't, because look at the tears coming out of my eyes. He was like, I'm tearing up too, but I'll do it. I'll do it. And I was like, thank you for being stronger than me.
It's very cute. A cute furry duck will elicit an emotional response.
And a cute furry animatronic duck.
Yeah. Does it say Affleck in Gilbert Gottfried's voice?
Thank the heavens.
Oh, come on.
No.
That is why I'd want to have, I just want to hear Gilbert Gottfried in my house.
It's also much cuter than the actual Affleck duck. It's rounder, it's yellower, it's got fur, it's not feathers.
It's very cute. It is very cute.
It was adorable and sweet in the story.
It's a great PR ploy for an insurance company. It's be like, let's not think about the mountains of bills these families are getting because of this, which is unfortunate. But the cute duck.
Yeah, it helped people. And also the actual Affleck duck did show up.
I feel like the celebrity Affleck duck with Gilbert Gottfried right behind it. But sorry to throw cold water in the shilling. This is our differences in personalities, because I'm like, hey, it's cute. It's a cute duck. It's also an insurance company.
I get that. Yeah. I 100% get that. I like that corporations can do good too on the side. And I think this is a nice effort. Well, not complete. Like, okay, look.
They did this for what happens at CES, for everyone to be like, oh, look at the cute duck. Oh, Sherilyn's crying.
Your heart is cold.
The duck.
Your heart. Stick your cart in the refrigerator.
It's called realism, Sherilyn.
Oh, yeah.
Affleck.
Sophia. Who are you looking forward to?
Nobody.
I know which celebrity you're most looking forward to meet. Me. I'm the biggest celebrity at CES because I'm one of the many judges of the official Best of CES Awards this year. I mean, Engadget has the seventh year running, been judging the official Best of CES Awards now. So, hey, let's check out some stuff, man.
If that makes you feel better, Sherilyn, sure.
Actually, I'm a Sherlebrity.
Ugh. And as we're getting ready for 2020, folks, it's probably a good time to go take a look at some of the best stuff Engadget did for 2019. And we have a whole collection of stories. It's called Engadget's Year in Review. Go look it up. I wrote about why 2020 is going to be a big year for VR. Probably it's a make or break year. We have posts about Spotify and what they were doing for podcasting. We've rounded up our favorite games and everything Twitch was doing to kind of lose its handle on game streaming. There's a lot of cool wrap-up stuff here. Before CES and before we're facing an onslaught of new devices, new products, I like to reflect. I like to take a step back. So go check out all that stuff.
I'm flying out to CES tomorrow, Devendra. You?
Yeah.
Are you stressed out?
I am super stressed out.
What are you doing, aka what is your Engadget pick for de-stressing before a show like this?
There's a lot of stuff. I've been catching up on Life is Strange 2 over the past week when I've had some downtime. And this is the sort of sequel to Life is Strange, the Square Enix game about teenagers with superpowers. And
ooh.
Life is Strange, the series, it's basically a visual novel. It's a lot like the Telltale games where, you know, you're watching a story, you're controlling characters and, you know, exploring the environments, but it's all about the choices you make and the impact they have on the story. I really love Life is Strange 2. It's about two Mexican-American brothers living in Seattle. Something really bad goes down, like within the first 20 minutes of the game. Something like this is a game that confronts real politics, like a police officer confronts their father on their front lawn and shoots their father.
Oh, that sounds too dark.
It is. This is a game, folks. And a crazy, like an explosion happens. We don't know quite what happens. The officer dies and the two brothers are left on the run to go survive basically being homeless and hiding from the law in the Pacific Northwest. This is the game. And it's a game all about brotherhood. It's a game about these two brown kids existing in America. And I love it just because I love when art can actually confront deep and, you know, dark political themes. We've seen a lot of developers kind of talk about, oh, they're gonna get really dirty with the real politics of America. I feel like the last Far Cry game tried so hard to do that. It was complete garbage. This is a game that's just like, hey, These are kind of experiences people of color have to live with in America. Throughout their journey, these two brothers, Sean and Daniel, turns out Daniel has like telekinetic powers. There's a bit of Akira going on here. And you're playing as the older brother who has to like manage your younger brother who could destroy people and kill people with, you know, the power of his mind. There's a lot of Akira in this game for sure. There's a lot of the relationship between like Kaneda and Tetsuo, but there's also a lot of Domu, which is Katsuhiro Otomo's other manga that is not as well known, but it's also about a kid with telekinetic powers dealing with fighting against an older person. Anyway, this game, I love it completely. It is so deep. It's so rich. You could play it across many different platforms. I love this style of game. And I love the fact that a major publisher like Square Enix allows like a smaller developer like Dontnod to just have some grand statements. This game goes places. This game confronts like the wall they're building at the border and just does really deep and interesting things. And this is a game. I can imagine this game is an empathy bomb. I can imagine people who don't really have these experiences playing through this and maybe just having a different take on what's happening in the world.
I think I might try to play that on the Switch I'm picking up today. So there you go. My pick is less of an empathy bomb, but still an empathy machine. And it's also, y'all are going to think, oh man, Sherlyn's getting more basic by the minute when you hear
my pick.
I think
that every day it's fine.
Oh, well, yeah, every minute. But my pick is, I guess, yoga, which sounds like the least, I know. It's like not the most inspiring
pick. Where's the
pick.
Tech, Sherlyn?
Well, no, the picks are not about tech, right? Okay, so I'm going to explain why yoga. I've kind of like came into yoga in 2019, and I've always struggled with like finding a workout that I enjoyed, right? The sports that I like are not something I have easy access to. Basketball is a team sport. I don't have enough people to play with, or to go to a court and find a ball. Swimming, I love swimming, but, and this is me bougie Cher speaking, but my pool is closed in the winters. So
wow. Let me
when the pool
I'm so sorry, Sherlyn.
When I can't go to my pool.
Your pool.
I have to find an alternative.
How you live?
And then I like gym. I like going to the gym, whatever. But it's so just mind-numbing. So
yeah,
I found hot yoga this year. And really what hot yoga is and what yoga is like you're not doing anything too like strange if you pick the right program for you. You're basically doing a set of like lunges, push-ups, you know, crunches throughout. And depending on your teacher, they're going to like guide you through the right course for you. You can pick it up. Like if you want a harder workout, you can go slower if you want to focus on balance and flexibility. And it's also very meditative. It takes my mind off things. And it's actually a workout I enjoy, which is really weird.
Cool.
And so it makes like resolutions easier to keep. And I think that for the start of the year, that's something for everyone to consider. Not even just yoga, but find
when
a workout that you enjoy.
When your pool is closed, try yoga.
God damn. My other pick, I tried to do another pick because I knew you all would find me basic, but this is also a pretty basic pick. I've been watching a lot of shows that Devin just made me watch lately, like Watchmen and The Umbrella Academy. And a lot of these, you know, the music is so important in these shows. And I love when, like, the producers pick, like, classical music to score up a very dramatic scene. So Beethoven, Symphony No. 7, mm-hmm. The Allegretto piece, that's just beautiful. The one that goes, should I hum it?
Let's
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's like Beethoven. I'm like, you know, I never really appreciated classical music in the past. I had to study it really hard, which is why I maybe didn't love it. But yeah.
That's very cool. Honestly, I really dig that too. That was when I was a kid watching Neon Genesis Evangelion. Like, that is the thing. That is the thing. It was like, what is this? I've heard classical music before, but it was used in such a way, like, when you hear, you know, Beethoven or something being used with giant robots fighting aliens coming from space, like, that is next level. So
it's swelling. It's
great.
So dramatic.
So good.
Emotive. It's great. So check out music soundtracks, classical soundtracks to shows.
Very cool.
That's it for the episode today, everybody. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra shouting into the void online at
Devendra, and also at the Slash Filmcast movie podcast at slashfilm.com.
If you want to ask me what yoga poses to hit, you can check me out on Twitter at ShirtlinLow. Please send us any questions or feedback at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on literally anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify. Come back next week for our CES episode.